For anyone who doesn't know already, we're talking with David J. Marks today. And if you don't know who David is, I would definitely consider giving you an eviction notice from that rock that you're living under. David is an accomplished designer. He's a furniture maker, a turner, and an artist. Now, he was the star of the Woodworks TV show on the DIY Network, which, in my opinion, is some of the best woodworking programming ever made. And now David travels around the world teaching woodworking as well as teaching in his very own school in Santa Rosa, California. Welcome to the Guild, David.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks for inviting me.
It's an absolute incredible pleasure to have you here tonight. And I hope you'll indulge me for a moment. I just want to explain to people how I know you, a little bit about how we met. I first learned about David, like a lot of people did, from watching the show on Woodworks. And, you know, basically just fell in love with the concept of the contemporary furniture. And I've watched Norm and This Old House, and I've seen basic furniture projects, and it intrigued me a little bit, but it never really bit me in the way that when I saw exotic woods being used and smooth curves and just the things that you bring to your work that just kind of captivated me. So to make a long story short, anyone who doesn't know already, I wound up spending some time learning from David directly. And in fact, some of my fondest woodworking memories are sitting in your shop, drinking coffee, and listening to jazz and talking about different designs. So clearly you've been a pretty big influence on me and my career. And, you know, honestly, without your influence, I really don't think the Wood Whisperer would exist in the form that it is today. So let me start with a big thank you.
Well, you're too kind, and I'm glad to hear that I influenced you to like jazz.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's my creative music now, you know.
All right, good stuff.
Okay, so to bring us up to speed, what have you been doing, let's say, since the Woodworks time?
Well, my wife Victoria and I opened a school in 2004. I mean, by the time that Woodworks was winding down, which was at the end of 2003, we were already receiving tons of emails from people saying, you know, love your program, how do you do this, how do you do that, do you teach classes? And we thought, well, you know, there's a need. We'll try to fill that need.
Mm-hmm.
So we remodeled the shop. We added on to the left and to the right and expanded it. We now have a 2,200 square foot facility with 8 workbenches and, let's see, we got 6 bandsaws, 4 jointers, 11 lathes, all kinds of tools, about 6 scroll saws. And we've been teaching classes at our shop. We've been working on educational DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also been traveling and teaching throughout the country as well as a little bit overseas. I've also taught quite a bit at the woodcraft stores nationwide. Mm-hmm. I've been out to a lot of different woodcraft stores everywhere from the West Coast to the East Coast. I just finished up a trip to Texas. And by the way, they said that they're looking forward to having the Wood Whisperer out there in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I got an email from them the other day. I haven't heard back, but I guess that's a good opportunity. I'll take it.
Sure. Yeah. Really, really nice people out there.
Cool.
Taught a bowl turning class at the Austin store and a class on bentwood lamination at the San Antonio store.
Oh, okay.
Mike Satter is the owner of the stores out there. Really, really nice guy. And then next week I'm heading out to Orlando, Florida. And I'll be teaching at Scott Carroll's store there for several days.
Okay.
And another class on resawing on the bandsaw and working with thin veneers. Then I'm heading down to Pompano Beach to teach at a non-store. And I'll be doing a hands-on class there on a hand-cut dovetailed box, as well as a Friday night presentation on gilding and patination.
Wow.
So if anybody's in that area, there's still some openings in those classes.
Oh, cool. Now, you mentioned TV and how, you know, people might make the assumption of how simple things are because they see it in a 22-minute time slot. So I wanted to talk about the schedule for Woodworks. And from my count, I think you did, 7 seasons? And I counted at least 90 different projects. And a lot of people, you know, a bunch of people in the chat room, I'm sure, haven't even made 90 projects in their lifetimes, let alone, you know, trying to hit 90 projects in the course of just a couple of years. So creatively speaking, just what was that like, taxing the creative side of your mind so hard and firing on all cylinders constantly, getting those ideas from your head to paper to actually making it happen? What was that like?
It was like working with a gun to your head. It was pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
there was, we did 91, you're correct, there were 7 seasons of 13 episodes. So it came out to 91 episodes. But some of those were tours. Some of those were visits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are eternally grateful that we got to interview Art Carpenter and James Cronoff before they passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just, you know, huge. And I feel very, very grateful for that. As far as the rest of the show, I think there is probably, I can't remember how many projects we built. I know we have about 40 of them in our home, but it was difficult trying to churn out all that material.
Yeah.
Just to backtrack a little bit, I did a program called Modern Masters, or I was one of the guests, you know, one of the hosts, or I did an episode on Modern Masters back in, I think, 1999.
Okay.
And that was on HGTV. And then when I got contacted for the DIY, the Woodwork series, that was, again, HGTV calling back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 2001. So, you know, when I first started talking to those guys, I said, look, you know, if you decide to select me as the host, I really like to get a three-month start so I have time to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Everything was subcontracted through a production company in Corte Madera, Edelman Productions. And I guess by the time things shook out, he said, well, you know, we want to do a test run in 2 weeks. We're going to hire one of Norm's cameramen to fly out and shoot the first episode. What can you pull off in 2 weeks?
Oh, jeez.
So there went the 3 months prep time.
Yeah.
And that was just pretty much how the insanity started. It was like, okay, you know, we got 2 weeks. And then from there, it just took off. And then from there, you know, eventually it ended up on DIY. But anyway, to answer your question, I've been woodworking since the early 70s, and I do a lot of one-of-a-kind pieces. So I kind of just borrowed from a lot of my former portfolio.
Okay.
And just, you know, changed things. I would change proportions, change elements, change the designs a bit, and essentially try to strip them down for television, you know, make them more simplified.
Sure.
Other than that, I mean, once we got up and running, typically they would ask for 15 drawings. So DIY would say, send in 15 drawings, and out of those 15 drawings, we'll select 13 episodes. So that's what I did. And so I didn't have to come up with, you know, 90 projects all at once. It was kind of come up with, you know, 15 ideas and then 15 more and then 15 more. But I'm pretty good at churning out ideas. And I can borrow from all kinds of different mediums. I'll look at stuff that glass blowers do, that ceramicists do, that metal workers do, and try to modify those for woodworking designs. And also a lot of it is looking through, you know, fine woodworking magazines and design books and, you know, maybe taking an idea from this and an idea from that. And basically sort of mixing and combining elements together.
Right.
There's an old expression that says there's nothing new under the sun. But to that, I will add that there is an infinite number of possibilities in how you combine ideas.
Sure.
So you could take one element of somebody's idea and combine that with another element and then, you know, bring in your own ideas and then make it a unique object.
Well, you know, one question I'm getting a lot from people, and it's probably half of the questions I've gotten so far, is are there any plans or will you ever even consider if the opportunity comes up to actually do a show again? Or is the future doing things on your own where you've got complete control over things like DVDs and web video?
Oh, well, the answer is sure. I mean, I would have kept going with DIY, you know, back in 2003. But for whatever reasons, you know, they figured the show had run its course or, I mean, what they told me, you know, precisely what I heard from the, you know, one of the big guys at the network was that the show had a lot of very enthusiastic viewers, but the audience was too small.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess their interpretation was that people really liked the show, but there wasn't enough people interested. It wasn't reaching, you know, the broader market.
Sure.
I guess I'm not what you call a practical woodworker. You know?
Well, and you're not painting a room or redecorating something or whatever
right.
The shows are now.
Yeah, yeah. And there's probably a lot of a lot of, I don't know, credibility to that. I guess, television has to reach a vast audience.
Mm-hmm.
When I started, my original deal was with HGTV. And then once we started shooting, I think we got to about the seventh or eighth episode. And then the producer said, by the way, you're going to be switched to a new network called DIY. Mm. And I said, DI who? And so at that point, DIY was only about 2 years old. And I think their viewing audience was up to 5 million households,
okay,
which is really, really small for television.
Sure.
And, when I left, I worked with them from 2001 to 2003, the end of 2003. It was a really jam-packed 3 years of doing 30 episodes a year for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we finished up the contract right at the beginning of 2004. And Steve Adelman, the owner of Adelman Productions, asked DIY, are we going to continue or is it over or, what should we plan on? And they said, the show's a big success. Don't go anywhere. We're just going on hiatus. Well, I think it's been about 6 years now.
That's a long hiatus.
The biggest hiatus record in television.
Right, right.
But yeah, the answer is sure. I'd be glad to do more shows if somebody, wanted to call me up and ask me to do some shows. The funny thing is that, it's kind of a one-way door. It's not like I can call the network and say, okay, let's get going, guys. Let's do some more shows. Just doesn't work that way. So in the meantime, we've started our own school, and I'm producing educational DVDs, which I think are a really good, affordable way for someone to get a class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I was actually going to switch gears to talk about the DVDs. If people don't already know, David does have quite a few out there, just a few of the titles. Jigs and Fixtures for Curved Linear Work, the Scrapers uh-huh. DVD that just came out last year, I think, and an older Gilding and Chemical Patination DVD, and now, of course, the brand new Bandsawn Veneers DVD, which I did get a chance to preview, and I'll show everybody on the webcam. I've got it right here. And if uh-huh. you could, David, tell us a little bit about this DVD and what people can expect from it.
Yeah. I'm real excited about this DVD because one of the things that I've taught quite a bit in my shop here in Santa Rosa, as well as on the road at various woodcraft stores and at some woodworking clubs, has been how to set up the bandsaw to cut it to make straight cuts. And I know a lot of people struggle with this. They think, I've got a good blade, I've got a good bandsaw, I've got a good fence, I've set everything up properly. Why doesn't the damn thing cut straight,
Right.
And most of it's in the blade. Blades have this nuance known as a drift. And what occurs is that when a bandsaw blade is manufactured, they're not precisely ground like a table saw blade. Table saw blades typically have carbide, brazed onto them, and then they have various tooth designs, and they are precision ground, and they cut, dead on straight.
Mm-hmm.
With a bandsaw blade, it's more of a production grinding method, unless you buy a carbide bandsaw blade, and those do tend to eliminate the drift for the most part. But with most of the carbon steel blades, when they grind out the teeth, the teeth might have a little bit more set to the left or a little bit more set to the right,
okay,
or they might be a little bit sharper on the left or a little bit sharper on the right. And the differences are very nominal. You might barely pick up on it at all mm-hmm. until you put the thing on the bandsaw and you try to cut. And the thing that really messes people up is that the nuance is consistent to each blade. So, for example, let's say you go out and you get a brand new blade, you put it on your bandsaw, and the thing cuts straight. You say, what's everybody talking about? Mine works fine.
Right.
Then that blade gets dull. You put another blade on there, and that thing will not cut straight to save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this. It's commonly referred to as a drift angle. And what I talk about in the DVD, or actually what I illustrate very clearly in the DVD, is how to identify the drift angle and how to compensate for the drift angle. It's a technique that I learned from, I learned it through James Krenoff.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go up there and just sit in on some of the seminars. But one of his students, he had a couple of students. One was Phil Walsh, who moved down to Santa Rosa. And I took classes with Phil back in the early 80s. Phil was a great instructor. Mm-hmm. And so Phil taught me a lot about the drift angles. And then another one was Monroe Robinson.
Okay.
Now, Monroe Robinson came down to Sonoma County and taught for the Sonoma County Woodworkers back in the early 80s. And Monroe needed a shop to teach in, so I volunteered my shop, and he actually taught a class on drift angles in my shop. So between Phil Walsh and Monroe Robinson, I learned quite a bit. And that was, you know, back in 1984, so add another 25 years of experience on top of that, and I've gotten pretty good with a bandsaw.
Yeah.
I've added some of my own tricks, auxiliary fences, different things that you can do to dampen out vibration on the bandsaw, some feather boards that I've refined over the past 25 years. It's a stacking feather board system, and just various other things that I've layered into the DVD. And we have gotten good feedback on it. I've got several people that have written back and said, "Wow, great stuff. I can actually cut veneers now. I'm amazed."
Yeah, and you do. I mean, I've tried to cut when things weren't perfect, and man, if you're not perfect and you try to cut a veneer slice of any board more than a few inches, you're dead in the water. I mean, you really have to have it dialed in.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And one of the things where I really honed my skills was it was in the 80s when I got that rare quilted mahogany.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff, when I bought it, was $30 a board foot. And then it didn't take long before it was up to $70, $80, and then eventually $125 a board foot. Now, when you're cutting wood that cost $125 a board foot, I mean, the sawdust is worth money,
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm trying to really maximize my yield from every board. And after cutting that for my own commissions for veneering, mm-hmm. I started getting into resawing sets for guitar makers. So at one point, I bought about $10,000 worth of that quilted mahogany, and I sawed up dozens and dozens and dozens of guitar sets. In fact, I just sold my last two just a few weeks ago.
Really?
I've been sitting on those. Yeah, that rare quilted mahogany. Just word of mouth. There's still people out there that are familiar with that wood and want some for guitars. And for a standard dreadnought guitar set, the backs are right around 1/8 of an inch thick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the sides are just a little bit less than that.
Okay.
And the guitar backs have to be about 8.5, 8.25 inches wide and about 22 inches long. So, you got to get that material just dead on.
Yeah.
And so I got a lot of practice resawing, and I do a lot of bentwood laminations, as you know.
Sure.
So I do spend a lot of time on the bandsaw, and I've gotten quite familiar with it. And it's like anything else, if you spend time with the stuff, you'll learn the nuances of the trade.
Sure. And the good thing is all of those tricks of the trade are in that DVD. So if anybody is out there having problems with that particular thing, definitely it's going to be a great resource for you. So if you have a chance, check it out. And the website is djmarks.com, correct?
Yes, yep, okay. Yeah.
And it should be right there on the homepage. Last time I saw it, it's the first entry on the homepage, and check it out. It's a great DVD.
And I'd also like to say a special thanks to my friend Blair Glenn, mm-hmm. down in Saratoga. Blair's a really great guy. He's a woodworker and an arborist, and a member of the Woodworking Association down the Bay Area. And I met Blair a while back at one of the Marquetry Society events,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
we started talking and decided to do some video work together. So Blair has produced this DVD, and I thought he did a great job with it. And our plan is to produce produce more.
Good.
On topics ranging from bent lamination to marquetry and inlay and finishing and dovetails and all kinds of stuff.
Fantastic. That's what I want to see.
All right.
Absolutely. And I know I'm not the only one, so.
Cool. Well, that'd be good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unless somebody calls up in the meantime and says, "Hey, David, we need you back to do a TV show.
Time to do another show."
So in the meantime, until that phone call comes again,
mm-hmm.
I'll be working on the educational DVDs.
Good deal. Briefly, take me, if you could, through the David Marks design process. And I'm really curious if it differs between when you're building furniture, something like your son's bar, versus your sculpture work and your artistic pieces. And just kind of give everybody perspective on what you do from start to finish.
Sure, sure. I'm glad to. The design process for me is very similar whether I'm doing a piece of furniture or doing a piece of sculpture, you know, doing a one-of-a-kind art piece, or just doing something as mundane as a business card holder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everything starts with an idea, starts with a thought, and then the next step is to record that thought. So the easiest and most efficient way to record that thought is on a piece of paper. You know, many, many famous artists and woodworkers and sculptors have been known just to scribble on a napkin while they're having a cup of coffee.
Right.
And there's a lot to that because the coffee tends to generate thought. And then as that stream of ideas comes in, you want to record those and get those down someplace.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always taught years ago to keep a sketchbook around and sketch out your ideas and keep those recorded, which I do.
Mm-hmm.
But for anything, you know, like let's say a piece of furniture, because I'm going to assume that most of your audience are furniture makers.
Mm-hmm, most
The first thing is just start with an idea. You know, let's say you want to build a cabinet to house a television. You want to start with the idea and you want to start with a sketch. And then you have to work around the existing dimensions or the design constraints. So, for example, if you know how big the TV is, you need to make it a little bit bigger to allow for airflow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, once I start, you know, kind of getting the parameters down, it's a good idea to start to do a full scale drawing on a piece of plywood or MDF, and to also try to mock something up. Now, at the same time, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. It's almost like juggling, because it's difficult to design something. Well, one of the challenges in designing something is that it's connected to technique.
Okay.
So say,
okay,
for example, if you're limited with your tools and limited with your techniques, it's going to limit your design. I would say think of language. If your vocabulary is limited, you will only be able to express yourself within the bounds of the words that you know and understand.
Sure.
As you start to increase your vocabulary, then you can start to talk about, you know, a much wider range of subjects. So in terms of design, you know, if what you know is straight lines, then your furniture is going to have straight lines. If you start to incorporate carving, then you can start to incorporate carved details into your designs. And then so on and so forth. Once you learn veneering, you can start to add veneers.
Mm-hmm.
As your finishes improves, you can start to expand with different types of finishes. So the design is totally connected to the techniques.
Right.
You know? And people will know that as they start out. In other words, if you're starting out to build something, and if you're kind of new to woodworking and you have a limited amount of tools, you know, maybe you want to work with plywoods and then cap the edges with solid wood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, work within the design vocabulary that you've got going there. As you start to branch out, you can start to add more elements to that.
How often do you think someone should maybe push those limits a little bit and go a little bit outside of that? Or is there a risk of going a little bit too far and falling flat on your face?
Well, I would never worry about a risk of going too far and falling flat on my face. What I would worry about is we are dealing with a very dangerous activity.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that I would tell anybody is, please, you know, we all have this inner voice. If you think it's dangerous, don't do it. Please don't do it. You know, I've only had one guy, one apprentice that has cut his finger in my shop. You know, in almost 30 years of business at this location.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was is that he didn't ask me for advice. I was in the other room, and next thing I know, I hear him yell. Well, he was trying to cut a small piece of wood, and he got his finger too close to the bandsaw blade and nicked his finger. So after we got back from the emergency room, you know, I said, you know, hey, why didn't you ask me for help? He says, well, there wouldn't be any safe way to do it. And I said, well, don't you think that maybe because I've been at this so many more years than you that maybe I might have some ideas?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, he was kind of amazed when I said, look, all you had to do was to take a bigger block of wood and double stick tape the smaller block of wood, and now you have a safe way to cut the small piece of wood on the bandsaw. And he was like, wow, I never would have thought of that. You know, so sometimes the simple stuff eludes us. But, yeah, the main thing I would tell people is to really, you know, if it feels dangerous, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, contact the wood whisperer and say, Mark, I'm trying to do something dangerous. Help me.
And then I'm going to write David and say, David, what do I do?
And David will say, hot milk, glue it to a bigger piece of wood, or double stick tape it to a bigger piece of wood.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think, where were we? We were talking about design. I would say to go for it because, you know, that's kind of my personality. I like to push the boundaries. Now, other people might not like to push the boundaries, and they might want to stay within their comfort zone, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends upon the individual, you know?
Sure, of course. Okay, well, I have monopolized your time here with my questions, and I'd like to go to the guys and gals. Do we have any gals in there tonight? We never really do. But anyway, let's go to their questions and see what we got. Now, we're going to go all over the map here and just hit you with some crazy stuff here.
Okay.
Let's see. Bedrock Bob wants to know if David's ever created any wooden musical instruments.
Ah, well, you could tell Bedrock Bob that... actually, my drum table, you know?
Uh-huh,
remember
from the show.
Drum table
yep.
I did on Woodworks? So hold on just a second. This is for Bedrock Bob. That's my drum table there.
Very cool. Good tonality.
Also, I did put a finish on a guitar for Steve Kimmock.
Okay.
So if you go to djmarks.com and if you go into the gallery section, I think it's listed under collections. And if you look up Steve Kimmock, K-I-M-O-C-K, a friend of mine, Tom Cerletti, made a Gretsch-style hollow body guitar. And I put the finish on with silver leaf and patinas, which came out pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to make some congas in my spare time.
Sure. Which you have plenty of, right?
yes, exactly. Between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m., I have lots of spare time.
Well, you also have to be a husband, too, so.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let me close with this question that just sort of came to me, and I'm sorry if I didn't get to everybody's questions. Maybe David will be able to have you back on the show and
sure.
You know, ask some more of these questions.
Thank you.
My question for you is, when, if you can pinpoint a time, did you first realize that you've made a transition from sort of being the person who's looking up to other people as your mentors, where you actually stopped and realized, wait a minute, I'm someone's mentor now, or thousands or millions of people's mentor, you know, as a result of the show? At what point did that really hit home for you?
I'm not sure if it's still hit home. Am I a big mentor? I don't know.
From my perspective, absolutely.
Well, thank you. I got into this never thinking I was going to be, you know, one of those guys that was really good at the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I still regard myself as a lifelong student. So I tell that to everybody. I'm a lifelong student. I mean, I'm still, hell, I got to watch the Wood Whisperer to find out the latest information and to stay up on what's happening in the craft. You know? The other thing, what do they say? The more you know, the more you forget, and then you got to relearn it all over again. But, I guess it was once emails started to come in from the TV show, I was like, oh, my God, you know, people are actually watching this thing and telling me that they learned something. I can't believe it.
Right.
And I was, you know, quite honestly scared to death to be on TV because, you know, you're putting it out there, and I wanted to research stuff and make sure that the information was accurate. And once we got going, there wasn't a whole lot of time, but just to hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the funny thing was, is I think after television, when I started getting requests to go on the road, that was kind of a big deal, because then I'd go out to a venue where maybe there'd be, you know, 15 or 20 people in a class, and I really got to interact with the students and have conversations back and forth and answer people's questions. And I thought, wow, I guess I do know a lot, because, you know, just when you start to answer questions, well, you know, the information was there.
Right.
I've pretty much, you know, been at this, you know, like I said, since the early 70s, and I've been reading books and magazines and going to workshops, and I pretty much eat, breathe, and live this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the point of, I'm not going to call myself a fanatic, but I don't play golf. I don't go to football games. I do go to the gym, and I do like to play drums.
Right.
So I do have some hobbies here.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm pretty much wrapped up in woodworking. It's something that I'm into constantly, as yourself now. I mean, you and Nicole have pretty much immersed yourselves in this stuff.
Can't get away from it.
No. And the more you do, the more you learn.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Sure, sure. Speaking of which, since we mentioned significant others, yeah, I got to put a special thanks out there to my wife, Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
I really wouldn't be able to run this business without her. She's been sensational. She, for some reason, doesn't mind doing paperwork.
And that's convenient.
And when you're in any kind of business, what's that?
I just said, that's convenient.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I love woodworking, so my preference is to be in the shop. She apparently loves doing the paperwork and sitting at the computer. So it's a marriage made in heaven.
That's good. That's important, because if you're significant, and I've said this to people who've asked me about business advice, and you know, the first thing I want to know is, does your significant other support what you're doing? Because if she or he doesn't, then you're dead in the water.
Well, it's true. It's really true, because you know, I think when we were talking, you know, a couple of days ago, we were talking about the business aspects of this. And it is. It's a tough way to earn a living. You got to be really dedicated and committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that if you love what you do, you kind of, you know, don't really pay attention to whether the money is coming in as much as you'd like it to. But, you know, in terms of having a spouse that's committed to it, that makes it all the more easier. So, you know, Victoria's been great that way. You know, we love each other. We've been married for 33 years. We've got a great relationship. She makes great brownies, so that when we teach classes, she comes out with fresh brownies. And actually, interestingly enough, I think what I've discovered is that the students are really coming out for the brownies, not for the woodwork.
Hey, whatever it takes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the new DVD is Bandsaw and Veneers. You guys should go to djmarks.com and check that out. And also, if you're in the area or you're inclined to probably take what I would think is going to be one of the best classes of your life, you can go to djmarks.com and look at the class schedule coming up and get up to Santa Rosa and take a class with David if you can.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other thing, too, I may as well tell this while I got the folks there, is I wanted to donate a couple of DVDs, you know, for any of your you know, giveaways or auctions that you're doing, something like that. So
okay.
We could throw that idea out there. And one thing I did want to say, too, before we end, was a special thanks to the Sonoma County Woodworkers Association. You know, various members that helped me when I was working on the TV show. So Scott Deal, you know, helped me tremendously. Carl Shoemaker, Larry Stroud, Rick Reedus, Link Van Cleef, Brad Boogie, Jerome Drabasi, Jonathan Taylor, and Greg Zoll. You know, all these guys were great, because, you know, once this whole TV thing started to unfold, I had to hit the ground running. And basically, I had a project almost every week,
mm-hmm.
and it was, you know, physically impossible for me to build all this stuff.
Sure.
I had to come up with the drawings and the prototypes, or, I mean, not the prototypes, but the mock-ups, and then, you know, have these guys build to my specifications. Because it would take us 30 hours a week just to videotape the show,
right,
and another 8 hours a week to do the voiceovers, and another 20 hours a week in various, you know, meetings and getting the shop ready and all this other stuff. Just wanted to illustrate that and, you know, thank all those guys for their help.
Cool. Well, David, it has been an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. And hopefully, if we could work it into your schedule, we would love to have you back. And maybe we'll just like hit a certain particular topic, you know, and dig into something.
I'd be glad to do it. Yeah. So, you know, stay in touch. And as stuff comes up, as you get more questions, I'm available.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you so much, David. And tell Victoria I said hello.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Mark, thank you so much. And then also thanks to all of your guild members for listening in. Sorry I didn't get a chance to answer all the questions, but, you know, like we said, we'll do it again sometime.
Sounds good to me.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Happy holidays to you.
All right.
All right. Take care, David.
Take care.